The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the herb.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator... Belleville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the weekend. It is Friday, October 15th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 everywhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Coming to you live and direct from beautiful Potland, Oregon and Rolla J Studios, and also joining us from our virtual studio in Grastoria, Oregon, my good friend and quarter sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Yes. Are you so excited for this weekend?
Oh my God, I'm headed down to the Cypress Hill Smokeout in San Bernardino.
I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, plane leaves early tomorrow morning and staying there for the day. Going to be meeting up with Rolla J, the namesake of our studio, and the NorCal Kid, one of our moderators in the chat room. We're going to have ourselves a good time down there in San Bernardino. And coming up at the end of the show, I'm going to give you a little preview of the Cypress Hill Smokeout, let you know what bands will be there, what panels will be going on, and our schedule for our live streaming feed. We should have a live signal down there, so check us out on Saturday. All day long, we will have coverage from the Cypress Hill Smokeout. Before we get to that, though, Cannabis Carrie brings us our news headlines right at the beginning of the show. So, Carrie, what's coming up in the headlines?
Well, we're going to go to an old bust in Canada. This story just jumped out at me. Something that's been coming 6 years in the making now. Also, some good news coming out of New Jersey. Finally, we're going to talk about that. But first up, the big news of the day. The feds are no longer silent about what will happen should Prop 19 pass.
Oh, we all know what will happen. You know, it'll be absolute mass chaos, rioting in the streets, cats and dogs living together, disasters of biblical proportions. We will debunk all of that coming up in our headlines. Thanks so much, Carrie. Also coming up on today's show, 20 after the hour, you've got your Rockin' Friday Daily Toker Tunes. Grateful Dread, our new music editor, is going to lend a hand here and give us a great tune for today. From David Gans. Also, a big reminder, folks, if you'd like to be our Rockin' Friday music editor, send me an email at stash@normal.org. We'll tell you how you can get involved, how you can volunteer and help make this show the best marijuana reform podcast on the internet. Also coming up on today's show, a very interesting conversation in our cannabis conversations. A press conference today was held by the California NAACP, Alice Huffman, the head of California NAACP, along with Stephen Gutwillig from the Drug Policy Alliance of California, Dale Jones, the chancellor of Oaksterdam University and spokeswoman for Prop 19, and Major Neil Franklin from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition were all at this press conference giving their opinions and looking forward to Prop 19. We'll have the highlights from that press conference coming up at half past the hour, so stick around. You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Check us out at our blog at stash.normal.org. You can follow me at Twitter, at Radical Russ. Ganja John is at Ganja John, and Cannabis Carrie is at Cannabis Carrie. We're right back with the news after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Mm-hmm. And now, a message from former President George W. Bush
to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly if I said some silly thing, and that's the reason why.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
The federal government has been mostly quiet on the most populated U.S. state considering legalizing marijuana. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder sent a letter on Wednesday to 9 former chiefs of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration vowing to vigorously enforce drug laws against people who grow, distribute, or sell marijuana for recreational use, even if California voters pass a measure to legalize it. Our nation's top federal law enforcement official vowed that the Obama administration would not take legalizing weed sitting down. California is poised to pass Prop 19 in a few weeks, which would legalize marijuana for all adults in the state and allow people to grow personal amounts in their homes. Holder's letter was made public today. He wrote, quote, "Let me state clearly that the Department of Justice strongly opposes Proposition 19. If passed, this legislation will greatly complicate federal drug enforcement efforts to the detriment of our citizens," unquote. Los Angeles County Sheriff Lee Baca hosted a news conference this morning to draw attention to the letter from the federal government official. In the letter, Holder promised to vigorously enforce the Controlled Substances Act, which places marijuana in its most dangerous category, a substance that has a great potential for abuse and zero medicinal value. His promise extends to those individuals and organizations that possess, manufacture, or distribute marijuana for recreational use, even if those activities are allowed under state law. It was just 1 year ago that Attorney General Holder announced that the administration will no longer spend any resources chasing medical marijuana patients in states that have legalized their rights to consume cannabis. That announcement last October 19th has led to a boom in the medical cannabis industry in many of the 14 states that recognize it as a treatment for individuals that qualify. But even as advocates for medical marijuana were emboldened by the message from our nation's leader, many of the raids of medical marijuana dispensaries have continued. Larger grow operations have been quietly being raided, and caregivers and dispensary owners have been arrested since that announcement. Now, this latest announcement follows a government survey that also came out this week that showed teen youth starting to experiment with marijuana at an earlier age, at the age of 17, down 0.8 years from a survey done just last year. The timing of the survey results, with the letter being sent out the very next day, seems like an orchestrated move on the Obama administration to kick off their own campaign against the will of the voters, should that will conflict with 70 plus years of reefer madness.
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Was the attorney general saying something? Something about if we legalize marijuana in California, the feds won't like it? Yeah, I'm sorry. I was looking back at my notes from 1996 when the attorney general was saying the same damn thing, that if California passed Prop 215 and legalized medical marijuana, that the feds wouldn't like it and it'd be a bad, bad, terrible thing. It didn't scare us then. It's not scaring us now. This is such an obviously transparent attempt by the federal government to try to scare those voters that are on the fence into thinking, well, gosh, we can't vote for legalizing marijuana. We wouldn't want Obama to be upset with us. Ooh, come on now. First of all, under our federal system of government, the states are not in charge of enforcing federal law. The states are given wide latitude to legislate and regulate the use of drugs in their states. Yes, there will still be a Federal Controlled Substances Act, but that does not mean that California has to enforce it. The local sheriffs, the local police department, the state cops, the California Highway Patrol, none of these guys are required by law or constitution to enforce federal laws. So don't believe the hype. Don't be scared by what the attorney general is saying here. Furthermore, when Prop 19 passes, it'll be better than when Prop 215 passed. When Prop 215 passed and legalized the medical use of marijuana for Californians who were seriously ill and had a doctor's recommendation, there was nothing in Prop 215 that stopped the local cops and the county sheriffs and the state cops from participating in those DEA raids to go up against the dispensaries. In Prop 19, there is specific language that forbids state and local law enforcement authorities from seizing, threatening to seize, or attempting to seize legally cultivated cannabis, legal plants, or the results of the harvest of those legal plants. So go ahead, Attorney General Holder, bring it. If you think you got the manpower and the resources in the DEA alone to try to enforce Federal Controlled Substances Act across the entire state of California, I'd like to see it. Because first of all, 1 out of 7 of every cannabis consumers in the United States lives in the state of California. California is the 8th largest economy in the world, and it has 55 electoral votes, the biggest electoral prize in the presidential election. If you want to sink President Obama's chances at re-election in 2012, the number one thing you should do is pick a fight with California, go against the will of the voters in a democracy, and completely piss off and alienate all the young, liberal, progressive, democratic voters in the United States.
A Canadian cannabis crime caper has finally led to a dozen arrests 6 long years after police raided a highly publicized grow operation. In Barrie, Ontario, Canada, police have arrested people they allege were the masterminds behind a massive cannabis growing operation housed in the former Molson Brewery building, a landmark building for the thousands of motorists that passed it daily on Highway 400. The large-scale grow operation was raided by police back in 2004 when they found hidden cameras, high-tech irrigation systems, and more than 1,000 high-powered grow lights. There were dormitory-style housing units for the gardeners, laundry facilities, televisions, and even game rooms. The more than 30,000 high-grade marijuana plants that were seized were being grown inside former beer vats. The complex could house 50 workers at a time, and it is estimated to have generated hundreds of millions of dollars every year. Now, at that time, 9 gardeners were charged for maintaining the grow-op, and 7 of those 9 were ultimately convicted and sentenced to terms ranging from 2 to 5 years. But police knew the operation was far larger than the people that were being paid room, board, and salaries to do the actual gardening. For years, the ringleaders have avoided arrests. Police say now that the bus didn't even stop them, and they have been growing high-grade marijuana in Ontario that is exported mostly to the U.S. in exchange for cocaine, cash, and weapons, according to the police. Now, on Wednesday, 12 suspects were arrested in connection with the Molson Brewing grow operation from 2004. Property and vehicles were also seized worth more than $7.5 million, including the former brewery building. The suspects face more than a dozen charges each, including aiding a criminal organization, conspiracy to traffic firearms, conspiracy to import cocaine, and production of marijuana.
Carrie, just a quick question on this. You mentioned these 7 out of 9 that got busted in this massive grow op were getting like 2 to 5 years each. Was there any note on, you know, how much they were busted with, you know, how much they produced as far as marijuana?
They had taken 30,000 plants. They put a dollar number at $7 million a year of pot that was growing. But they always knew all along that they were just workers in this chain.
Yeah, but we're talking about guys that got caught growing, you know, over 30,000 plants
yes.
on the long term.
Yes.
Now, how much did that Mississippi guy get for growing plants the other day?
Well, he wasn't actually growing plants. He was in possession of 69.9 pounds of marijuana, some cash, and a couple of guns. He got 60 years in prison.
Right. Okay. So this just illustrates a point. You know, the entire world's a little bit reefer mad as far as, you know, marijuana prohibition goes. But it all evolved from the United States pushing the rest of those countries into signing into the UN treaties, the 61 treaty, the 88 treaty, I believe, and so on, that, criminalized cannabis to these extents. But even so, even with the rest of these Western democracies signing on to the United States' hatred of cannabis, None of them take it to the extent we do. Here's guys, you know, seven guys in a major operation, 7.5 million cocaine, guns, you know, lots of cannabis, 30,000 plants, 2 to 5 years, right? And meanwhile, we got guys in Oklahoma that get sentenced for, you know, less than a gram and they get 90 years. We got guys in Mississippi getting sentenced for a few pounds, you know, scores of pounds of marijuana getting sentenced for 60 years. We get people, you know, mandatory minimum sentences going away for decades at a time. So it just once again illustrates that, even though other countries like Canada and, you know, Britain and Australia also keep cannabis illegal, nobody is as reefer mad about punishing it as we are here in the land of the free.
The New Jersey senator who sponsored New Jersey's medical marijuana law is challenging the strict new rules imposed on the yet-to-begin program. Senator Nick Scutari said the health department's draft regulations have set up too many roadblocks for people the law was intended for. Senator Scutari said on Thursday that the regulations are making it impossible to implement the medical marijuana statute that was signed into law. The new rules for New Jersey's medical marijuana law passed last January are more restrictive than any other medical marijuana program in the country. Scutari announced that he will introduce a resolution on Monday challenging the proposed regulations. If it passes, the health department would get 30 days to withdraw the rules or rewrite them. Another good sign, he points out that the state constitution of New Jersey gives the legislature the power to invalidate rules that go beyond what the lawmakers intended. The new rules and regulations released on October 6 made rules such as limiting the amount of THC allowed in the plant at only 10% of what is allowed in the strength available in the pill form of the drug, and restricting growing sites of the entire state to only 2 dispensaries. The new rules also limited the number of strains that would be available to medical marijuana patients to 3. The ability to cultivate the plant yourself had already been stripped from the law as it was passed by the outgoing governor of the state back in January. The current governor, Chris Christie, a former federal prosecutor, has said that he would not have signed the law in its current form, and also that he doesn't want to deny sick patients from access to marijuana, but he insists the law must remain restrictive to avoid the abuses in states like California. The state's proposed regulations were to go into effect in January and allow for only 2 growers and 4 clinics to distribute the medical cannabis that would not be available to patients that qualify until sometime next summer. Patients would then have to pay $200 every 2 years to buy their medicine from one of the few alternative treatment centers whose fees would be $20,000 a year to operate. Advocates for medical marijuana are hopeful that Senator Scutari's resolution will pass in the current Democratic-controlled legislature.
Yeah, Governor Chris Christie is definitely a flexible receptacle for a feminine hygiene product, if you ask me. This guy saying he wouldn't sign the law as it is now, but on the same breath saying he doesn't want to see, you know, suffering people, you know, suffer any longer. What a bunch of hooey. I'm busting the FCC filter here thinking about this guy. First of all, he's setting up the rules here to be so restrictive that nobody could possibly, you know, jump through these hoops. The hoops are just too high to jump through. And this was a law that was crafted specifically in the law. They have it, you know, that you qualify if you have a terminal disease with less than 12 months to live. But between the time that the outgoing governor Corzine signed this law and the time that this program finally gets on track, it'll be 18 months or more. So much for those poor, sick, and dying people you don't want to see suffer, Governor Christie. And come on now, saying that you want to avoid the problems of California, this is the biggest cop-out that I hear from all of these anti-marijuana politicians across the country, especially on the East Coast. Ooh, we don't want it to turn out like California. As if California is the only state in the nation that has a medical marijuana program. What? You couldn't take a look at Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Hawaii, Colorado, New Mexico, Montana, Michigan, Rhode Island, Vermont, I mean, Maine, there are all these other programs out there you can take a look at where none of the abuses that we see in California are going on. And, you know, I hesitate to even call them abuses because it's marijuana. It's not like it's going to kill anyone. It's not like it's going to harm anyone if they get a hold of it. Less than 10% THC. You know, in the Netherlands, for their medical marijuana program, they don't even call it medical unless it's 15% THC. The notion that you're going to limit your entire genetic diversity to three strains? That would be like saying, okay, let's just have three painkillers. We'll have aspirin, we'll have Tylenol, and we'll have morphine. And nothing else. Let's just have those three painkillers. Let's just have three brands of beer. Coors, Miller, and Bud. Let's just have those. No microbrews, no nothing else. Let's just restrict this as much as we can. I'm so upset about this New Jersey no Garden State BS. And if you'd like to get involved and help, please look up Normal New Jersey, normalnj.org, or if you specifically want to get involved on the medical marijuana issue, go to the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey, cmmnj.org. Oh, it's 420. Speaking of the East Coast, all my friends out there in Jersey, I hope you're having yourself a good time. We're going to keep working. We're going to spread medical marijuana all across the East Coast. You can't stop it.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met
that? Be right back after this. We're coming back with your Daily Toker Tunes, Rockin' Friday with Grateful Dread Public Radio. Stick around.
If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Hey, man, why are those people laughing?
They're laughing because they're high.
They're high? What are they all high on?
They're high on THC.
Whoa, wait a minute. I thought THC was illegal. Can't you get busted and go to jail for being high on THC?
No, dumbass. THC, the Hydro Comics.
Huh? The Hydro Comics? What are the Hydro Comics?
The Hydro Comics are a group of comedians, musicians, and advocates for the legalization of medical marijuana.
What? Really?
I am not shitting you. Yeah, they're all about passing around love and laughter while spreading awareness about the legalization of medical marijuana and the reform of marijuana laws.
Wow. How do I get high on THC? I mean the Hydro Comics.
All you have to do is go to their next gig and show your support for the legalization of medical marijuana and the reform of marijuana laws.
Oh yeah, I'm down. Where's the Hydro Comics next show?
What am I, their mother? The Hydro Comics Legalized Laughter Tour will be at the Crossroads in Garwood, New Jersey on October 22nd. For more information or ticket sales, call the Crossroads at 908-518-0323. That's 908-518-0323. Or visit them on the web at xxroads.com.
The Hydro Comics are proud to be sponsored by Normal, the national organization to reform marijuana laws, and CMMNJ, the Coalition for Medical Marijuana, New Jersey.
Well, man, I just saw the Hydro Comics, and I'm fucking high!
The Hydro Comics do not elicit or approve the use of any illegal drugs, and due to the content and nature of this show, the Hydro Comics Legalized Laughter Tour strongly advises all patrons not to carry or use any illegal substances on or around the premises.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today, we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday. Our segment features the best of rock, metal, punk, and jam band music, brought to you by Eric Smokes Bud in Madison, Wisconsin. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey now, freedom fighters. Grateful Dread here in the studios of member-supported Grateful Dread Public Radio, the progressive peace voice of Summit, New Jersey. Check out our kind music and news talk at gdreadradio.net. Before we get to today's Toker Tune, we want to send out a shout-out to Ganja John. We are wishing you a speedy and peaceful recovery, my friend. Cannot wait to see you out and about. Let's get to it. The Friday Toker Tune this week comes from a dear friend of mine, David Gans. Now, you may know David as the host and producer of the legendary syndicated radio show, The Grateful Dead Hour. Well, he's also an accomplished singer-songwriter who performs all around this great nation for appreciative jam band fans. David covers lots of subjects in his music, among them the dead, nostalgia, and life on the road. Mostly, though, he tells stories. In today's tune, which comes from the 2007 CD Twisted Love Songs, he tells the tale of a righteous tie-dyed dude who's being hassled in the workplace by the man. I'm sure you can identify with David Gans. Hi Guy. You can find this and other Gans music at his website, dgans.com, that's dgans.com, and on MySpace, Facebook, and CD Baby. For now, though, we've got him right here on Normal Show Live. This is David Gans, and hi, Guy.
I'm of the opinion that what we need in this country is drug proficiency testing. I think I'm right on the verge of going postal, 'cause the Dilberts are driving me insane. There's such a lack of enjoyment in my place of employment, it is time to initiate the end game. You see, I had me a job watching ice melt, but the action was more than I could take. So I took a position in another division, now I spend my days watching hearts break. Watching hearts break. It's a corporate culture like a shark tank. They can't even read your resume. But once you get hired, you can never get fired. Though you have to be crazy if you do stay. If you do stay. And now a high guy in a tie-dye is waving bye-bye with a dry eye on a flyby in a high sky, singing my, my, why try? He's singing my, my, why try? Well, I was pissed 'cause I had to take a drug test. I was drunk, but they didn't seem to care. It's just my chemo solution to my moral pollution. Not a reason I shouldn't get to work there. Get to work there. And now I'm trying to find myself a new gig where the corporate culture ain't so cruel. The defamation machine is so efficient and mean, it makes adulthood alarmingly like high school. Like high school. And now a high guy in a tie-dye is waving bye-bye with a dry eye on a fly-by in a high sky, singing my, my, why try? He's singing my, my, why?
Song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
Hey everybody, time for Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Coming up tomorrow, Saturday, October 16th, the folks at Ohio Normal want you to get involved with a rally at the State House, One Capitol Square in Columbus, Ohio, to speak out for Ohio's medical marijuana bill, HB 478. They'll have information, music, speakers, and hopefully you. Also, tomorrow morning, Saturday, October 16th, Cass County Compassion Club is meeting at the Cass District Library. For more information, you can get email addresses and phone numbers from our calendar at stash.normal.org, or I'm sorry, normal.org/calendar. Excuse me. Johnson County Normal is having a movie night on Saturday. This will be at the Colombo Cultural Center. RSVP for the address. Joko Normal is in Johnson County, Kansas. But the big event taking place on Saturday, October 16th is the Guerrilla Union Smokeout. This is the Cypress Hill Smokeout at the NOS Event Center in San Bernardino, California. For more information, you can go to smokeoutfestival.com and you'll have the list of all of the bands and the panels. And coming up at the end of our show, I'm going to give you a bit more of a preview of what's happening this weekend at that Cypress Hill Festival. So check us out at the end of the show. Coming up next week, we've got some more events, but of course we want to encourage everyone in the state of California to register to vote by this Monday. Monday is the last day to register to vote. You could actually cast your vote for legalization in not just California, but the United States and eventually actually the whole world. It's that important. Go to yeson19.com to get your information on how to register to vote and get involved in phone banking this weekend. Give up a little bit of time and a few of your cell phone minutes, no matter where you are in the United States or the world, and call the young people of California. The folks at Students for Sensible Drug Policy are helping to arrange this phone banking, so check them out at justsaynow.com and you can get more information. And to learn everything about our calendar of events, just check out Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
NORML, unlike any other marijuana or drug reform organization, is built from the ground up by grassroots activists. We are the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, and we aren't just anti-prohibition, we're pro-marijuana. Every week, we take some time to talk to the citizens of local NORML chapters across the country and around the world, as well as others who are working to make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. In this segment, we call Grassroots Activism.
But you know that African-American people use marijuana less than white people, but they're arrested 2 to 3 times greater. There's going to be another study coming out that shows it's even worse in urban areas. And that all they're doing is they're destroying our young people to populate the prisons for that slave labor that's going on in the prisons. And so everybody's saying, oh, well, it was just a misdemeanor. But, you know, they target our communities for arrests over the weekends. It's racial profiling. They shake those guys down. They smell a joint. They take them in, so they get in the system. And then when they're once in the system, even though it's a misdemeanor, if they don't have the $100 fine, they still have a problem. And so then if they're arrested again for it, now they're on the way to felony. And we have more felony arrests for possession, not for selling, but for possession that's destroying our community. So I believe that the war on drug has failed. I believe that the drug war against our community, it's not a drug war against the warlords and the cartels. And I believe that if we in California can take the lead, and I'm in a legalization campaign because Prop 19 has given us the opportunity to talk about the prison system and the criminal justice system and how they're targeting us and why it is a civil rights issue, because they're locking us up disproportionately. And government one more time has targeted our people and failed our people, just like they did with slavery, just like they did with the black codes, just like they did unequal schools. All these government programs that disadvantage us, we have to challenge.
We have, as Ms. Huffman has indicated, made some modest contributions in support of the extraordinary efforts that the California Conference of the NAACP have made under Ms. Huffman's leadership to raise the issue of the, of failed drug war policies in general and the need to pass Proposition 19 in California in particular as part of a as part of an exit strategy in the war on drugs. The investments that we have made total $75,000, and they are part of an overall series of investments that the Drug Policy Alliance's Committee in Support of Proposition 19 is making, focusing on voter mobilization efforts on communities of color and young voters in the final weeks of the campaign. I would amplify Ms. Huffman's comments about the targeting of African Americans in California for marijuana offenses at all levels, and just to add a little bit more more detail to the chilling realities of what marijuana enforcement looks like for African Americans in California. To begin with, marijuana enforcement is big business for law enforcement across the state. We all think of marijuana, of course, as big business for marijuana growers and sellers, and increasingly that it is a mainstream recreational drug with a $14 billion market that is completely out of control in the state with almost universal access among young people. It is, however, there is a massive escalation of police enforcement of low-level marijuana possession in the last 20 years. That the arrests for that one crime, petty personal possession of marijuana in California, arrests have tripled the last 18 years, while the arrest rate for all crime in California has fallen 40%, and the arrest rate for most serious crimes, rape and murder, have fallen by 30%. At the heart of the escalation of low-level marijuana possession arrests, tripling from about 20,000 in 1990 to 61,000 arrests last year, are disturbing and profound race-based disparities, primarily the targeting of African-American young men. Within the, and that is within a context of longstanding evidence from the federal government that indicates that young African Americans consume marijuana at substantially lower rates than young whites. So there's not only targeting going on of African Americans, but within a context of selective enforcement of laws that are actually broken by whites at higher rates than blacks. Specifically, African Americans have tripled the likelihood of being arrested for marijuana possession in California. But when you look at individual cities and counties, the race-based disparities in arrests are much, much higher. African Americans are arrested at anywhere up to 12 times the rates of whites in certain cities.
My name is Dale Jones. I'm the Executive Chancellor for Oaksterdam University and the spokeswoman for Proposition 19. I'm here predominantly just to answer any specific questions that you might have about the details of Prop 19, its intent, or its potential impacts. I think we can all agree that the current policy has failed, and Prop 19 is about providing an opportunity to have safer communities to control cannabis away from kids by taking cannabis out of the hands of drug cartels. And frankly, through controlling and taxing, we can pay not only for these programs, but also for education, public health, public safety programs. It's time to give California its fair share. And this is also about jobs. We have an opportunity for tens of thousands of green, sustainable jobs here in California. And those are just the labor job estimates. We also have, you know, just the great mom and pop industries and the small businesses that are the backbone of California. So, you know, between the combination of education and the opportunity for jobs, that really does indicate the path towards success. And Ms. Huffman has spoken quite eloquently on the war on the community and how it makes it nearly impossible to have either a job or education with our current policies. I encourage you to read Prop 19 to discover for yourself what we do and what we don't do, and apply the same scrutiny to our opposition arguments to maintain the status quo. Our initiative is very carefully written with a very broad coalition, and since then, we have built into a remarkable coalition, not just partnering with NAACP, but also the Latino Voters League, and recently LULAC, which is the largest Latino advocacy coalition.
I'm a retired major from Maryland State Police. I'm the executive director for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and just real quick, in case you don't know or forgot, we are an organization of thousands of law enforcement officials that covers not just cops, but judges, prosecutors, corrections officials, and some retired feds as well. And so we are out here supporting Proposition 19 in California. We have many of our members are from and live in California. You may have seen many of them in the press, such as Joe McNamara and Kyle Kazan and Judge Jim Gray, to name a few. Sacramento, we have Nate. Basically, I just want to make a couple comments. First, if you haven't read Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration, The Age of Colorblindness, you need to. You need to get, and you start reading that. That talk speaks to a lot of what we're talking about here today as to how this affects the African-American population. Now, from a long, you've heard a lot of statistics, great statistics here. I want to talk about this from a cop's perspective, a law enforcement perspective. I'm a black law enforcement official for over 33 years, and I spent most of that time in narcotics enforcement. And I say that for a reason, because I know how we in law enforcement continue to target blacks and black communities, poor communities, communities of color, whether this is an intentional or by design, and I think you'll find that it's part of both, being intentional and unintentional. It's a numbers game for law enforcement agencies. The more arrests they make, the more federal funding that they get. And when you hear law enforcement officials referring to the states and jurisdictions possibly losing federal dollars, that's what that's about. They mentioned some other things, but primarily it's that they would not, potentially may not receive the grants and the federal funds that they currently receive, such as burn grants, for making all these arrests, which indicate, I guess it's supposed to indicate that they have a drug problem, so therefore they get more funding. Another thing tied to funding is, and I refer to it as policing for profit, and that's asset forfeitures. They're currently out of control. Many states have gone through some reform. However, what law enforcement agencies are doing, they are bypassing state policy, and they are filing for these asset forfeitures through the feds. The Fed takes a certain percentage off the top, and majority of that money comes back to that local jurisdiction or state jurisdiction for further law enforcement activities, such as buying equipment and balancing budgets. A lot of budgets are balanced from federal funds and asset forfeitures. Another piece of this is that, I speak about these federal funds. We don't get federal funds for arresting rapists. We don't get federal funds for arresting murderers and child molesters or finding missing children, but we should. And maybe law enforcement would then refocus their priorities into those crimes against people that, in my opinion, really, really matter. This is the foundation, the prohibition of marijuana and other drugs. We're talking about marijuana. It is the foundation of racial profiling in this country. You need to understand that. It's the core of its existence, because that's why we stop cars out here. That's why we search people every day, because we're looking for drugs. The basis for racial profiling, and we know how that has plagued this country. Young black kids tell you, they will tell you today, that the police only come into communities, into their neighborhoods to look and search for drugs. and police are slow to respond when called for other crimes. That's because they're so busy, you know, dealing with clearing corners and arresting people for drug violations. The violence in our communities, the violence in black communities and also Latino communities is literally off the charts. And the majority of that violence, the foundation, once again, for that violence is the illegal drug market. I know this. I've dealt with it for three decades. It is a problem. And the only way that we can begin, and I say begin because, yes, it's not going to happen overnight, but we have to begin changing the environments in our black communities, changing the environment in our poor communities. We have to begin with legalizing marijuana, which is a majority of the profits, not just for the cartel, but for our neighborhood gangs as well. So if we're able to do that, we can start reducing the violence in our communities. An example is and I know it's on the other side of the country, but it's indicative across the country. An example, real quick, is in Mattapan, just south of Boston, just a few days ago, a marijuana deal going bad. We have four dead, one of which is a toddler. And another gentleman's hanging on by a very narrow strand to life. And, you know, it's the foundation for the violence that we have in our communities, and we need to begin reversing that trend by legalizing marijuana. So those are my quick statements.
You said earlier in your presentation that the foundation of racial profiling is law enforcement agencies. Our first thing that they're looking for are drugs?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's no doubt we spend at least 70% of our time in these neighborhoods. And there are many reasons, other reasons we go in, because we get called by citizens, good citizens, to get drug dealers off of corners. But we primarily go into these communities and we search people on the streets looking for drugs. We're looking for the drug dealers. We're looking for the people selling the drugs. When we stop cars, and we have classes on this, we take our best, we take our officers and so on, who are best for doing this, who make the most arrests and who have developed a craft, a technique for doing this, we take them and we train other officers on what to say, what to ask, what to look for when we stop cars. And primarily, that's usually the initial thing that we go to when we stop a car. We're looking for drugs. Yeah, we're looking for guns too, but you know, it's all about drugs. When you talk to our young people, they will tell you the only reason these cops are in our neighborhoods, and this is how they feel. This is their perception, and perception's reality to them, that they're there to look for drugs. And when they are called for a crime of violence, they're slow to respond.
That's an excellent question, and this is Dale Jones with the Yes on Prop 19 campaign, and perhaps Stephen may have something to add with his work on the Hill as well, but we've been working very diligently to try to actually make this happen. Part of the limitations under current law has been that it restricts things like safety testing, so it's very important that we establish not only control over the product and the dispensation if that community chooses to go to sales, but even for medical use only. We've established the Medical Cannabis Safety Council, as well as several other organizations around the state that have been working on these issues and frankly are ready to disseminate this type of information that is at least it's difficult because you don't have the science-based studies in the U.S. to point to. You do have many studies outside the U.S., but you have hundreds of thousands of testimonials as well that are available as far as patient use and experience. The important part here is to address not just titration of amounts to use, but also proper product labeling, things like keeping away from children. Prop 19 also specifically forbids smoking in front of children, smoking in public, both of which are rather cloudy issues under the current law. Forgive my pun, but it's there are no restrictions right now, and we're having many conversations to try to get to that point. As long as we are in a prohibition market, rather than a regulated market, we can't even have that conversation. And so, yes, it's a little bit out there, but it's important, and it's something we've already been working on for the last couple of years and will continue to work diligently on, regardless of whether or not Prop 19 is passed.
It is unlikely that the state of California will put any effort into promoting the details of the change in law represented by the passage of Proposition 19. But I think that that is going to be primarily okay because 1 ounce of marijuana is a relatively substantial amount of marijuana that most people do not walk around with on their person. When the police stop young people and search young people either on the street or in their cars, they are finding quantities of marijuana that are generally substantially less than that. The people or more who are arrested and cited in California every year for low-level possession of marijuana have generally much less than 1 ounce on them. These people will no longer be subject to citation under there will be no penalties whatever for that.
Importantly, too, if I may briefly, the taxes that are brought in, the revenues, just even on medical alone, was over $1 million last year. It's those taxes and revenues, the local cities and counties, permitting fees, things along those lines, that can not only go towards paying for some of these programs, but also importantly, the treatment programs, not just to support them, but also, a lot of the folks that are in these treatment programs are in there because it was a plea bargain. They had a choice between jail or treatment. And as a result, there are no rooms left for the folks that truly need it. And so it will also, on the back end, open up the opportunity for those that do go down the wrong path to actually get the treatment that they need.
I would like to add the NAACP, under my leadership, has had its eyes open. And we are going to be in this war for a long time. And I know everything they're talking about generally doesn't get to our community. We're always the last to know what's going on and the last to be tuned in, but we don't intend to let that happen as we pursue a shift in America on how people treat drug addicted people and our community. So we will be looking for resources to stay in this game until we can turn America around in its drug policies.
And this is Neil Franklin, just a quick comment. This is something that if you look at the past decade and you watch the needle movement that relates to marijuana legalization in California and across the country, it is something that we know has to happen, but we also know that it is something that will happen. And for a policymaker and an elected official to be just sitting back and doing nothing, I see that as irresponsible. And what I mean by that is, it is their responsibility to be out in front, to be crafting policy, to be bringing people together within their circles, and looking at this issue and formulating models of talking about where resources need to go, talking about and putting a plan together as to the collection of fees and establishing a process for informing their constituents and the citizens and what have you, and being prepared so that when it does pass, because the people are obviously way out in front on this, so it is going to pass, they need to be prepared to move this thing in their areas of responsibility to ensure that their citizens are not just informed, but that monies are directed to where they need to go and efforts that need to be supported. So those elected officials need to be moving on this. And if, this is my opinion, if they're not, they need to be replaced, period.
The most devastating effect of the war on marijuana is that it is a war on everyday people like you and me. All week, we speak to the doctors, scientists, celebrities, and politicians who make up the professionals fighting for cannabis liberty. But we never forget about the tens of millions who use cannabis, the millions who need medical access to cannabis, and the hundreds of thousands arrested every year for cannabis, and the tens of thousands imprisoned under our marijuana laws. At Normal, we are the Cannabis Consumers Lobby, and we take this opportunity to share the experience of our cannabis community.
Welcome back, everyone. 54 after the hour, and before we go much further, big thanks to the folks at the California NAACP for putting on that press conference earlier today. Those of you who are listening to the stream got to hear the whole thing live. That was about 20 minutes of highlights from it. I did manage to get a question in, but it came in later, and so I'll probably save that for next week's show. Also wanted to give a shout out to my good friend Scott Gordon at Herb Age Designs. It's semi-casual Friday, so we're wearing the new sand camo Herb Age t-shirt. It's really cool. You can get yours by going to herbagedesigns.com. That's U-R-B-A-G-E designs.com, Herb Age Designs. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about this weekend. The Cypress Hill Smokeout is coming up here at the National Orange Center in San Bernardino, California, and I'll give you the logo right there, a little Cypress Hill Smokeout. You can get more information about the Smokeout by going to smokeoutfestival.com. That's smokeoutfestival.com to get the information. And I'm telling you, folks, this is going to be an amazing show. I can't wait to get there. First of all, the tickets for the show, and, you know, I know times are tough, folks, but this will definitely be worth your money. The tickets for the show, general admission, are $75 plus fees. But this is a show that begins at noon. Doors open at noon and doesn't shut down till like 2 in the morning. So it's an all-day thing with tons of bands and tons of great panels. But what I really like about this, the folks at Guerrilla Union that put this on, these event producers, also give you VIP areas. They have a VIP ticket you can get, very important pot smoker, $200 plus fees. But for that $200, you get to go to the artist meet and greets. That is, you'll get to go backstage and shake hands and get autographs from the various artists, you know, Cypress Hill, Living Color, Incubus that are going to be playing, and so on. You get access to the viewing area of the main stage, a closer area of the stage, a 2010 festival t-shirt, a backpack, a poster, your credentials, you know, your little wristbands that you need, two drink tickets, green carpet entry, VIP party, private full bar, and VIP restroom facilities. Everybody else who's paying the $75 general admission, they're just kind of out on this big open area. There's no seating. It's just a big grassy kind of area with vendors and such and the typical porta potties. But if you're in the VIP area, it's roped off. There's little tables and gazebos where you can sit and enjoy yourself. Of course, there is a Prop 215 medication areas. People will have the wristbands for those as well. And if you really want to break the bank, you can be a High Roller VIP for $420 plus fees for one ticket, but you get the artist meet and greet, the festival t-shirt, backpack, poster, credentials, two drink tickets, green carpet entry, VIP party, and also, here's where you get the High Roller part, a private full bar, elevated VIP cabanas with view of the main stage, catering, and you'll get to eat for free, champagne, they got waitresses coming around with free champagne, and your VIP restrooms. And that will be the, I think that's the level of ticket that we get, myself and Rolla J and NorCal Kid when we go out to there. I know we at least get the VIP level. I don't know if we get the VIP High Roller. I think not, if I'm remembering. I was at this event last year, and if I remember correctly, I couldn't get into the High Roller section, but I was able to get into the VIP section. It's, believe me, it's a lot of fun. Now, what you'll be looking forward to if you want to come out to this Cypress Hill Smokeout this Saturday are some great bands. Three different stages of bands. On the Smokeout stage, we've got DJ Muggs, Living Legends, Atmosphere, Nas and Damian Marley, Slightly Stupid. Cypress Hill plays at 7 o'clock, and I understand they're going to be playing cover to cover from beginning track to end track of the Cypress Hill album with, you know, hits from the bong and all of that. Manu Chao is on at 8:30, and then Incubus finishes up on the Smokeout stage at 10:15 p.m. On the Indonesia stage, we're going to have Bobo and Retmatic, Against the Girl, Los Rocas, Iration, Kali Buds, the reggae performer everybody loves, Maldita Vecindad, I'm probably mispronouncing it, Maldita. And then, of course, the group I'm looking forward to since I'm old, Living Color. That's right, 80s rockers Living Color at 7:45 p.m. on the Indonesia stage. Erica Badu at 9:15. That'll be another great performer. And then on the Massive Stone Garden, Pablo Hassan, DJ Muggs, Lenny Five, Reza, Dan Black, Chucky, Basement Jacks, MGMT, Paul Oakenfold, and Deadmau5 Unhooked. Plus, there'll be movies being shown, Dazed and Confused, Friday, Pulp Fiction, and The Big Lebowski, introduced by Jeff the Dude Dowd himself, the man who the dude was based on. Plus the panels, I'll be doing the Prop 19 panel at 4:30, there's a cultivation class at 3:15, a dispensary report at 2, and Steve Bloom with his Reefer Movie Madness presentation at 5:45 p.m. We'll be covering it live right here at live.normal.org, so stick around on Saturday all day long for coverage of the Cypress Hill Smokeout. For everybody here at normal.org, I'm Radical Russ for Cannabis Carry. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.